Welcome all to OA Footsteps Speaker Meeting, which is dedicated to highlighting the various meetings found on our meeting schedule this week. And today's highlight, I am especially delighted to share, is, it's Gene, who represents a number of meetings. So I'm not sure which one he's highlighting himself, so I'm going to leave that up to him. This is an opportunity for him to share his story, his experience, strength, and hope, and provide a little information about their meeting. And it'll be followed by a Q&A period afterwards. So if you have questions, please do write them in the chat. The chat will be closed during the duration of this meeting. But if you post a message in chat, it'll go through to the leaders. So, okay. So, Gene, I am so proud to welcome you. Your time starts now. Do you have a preference to how you wish to be timed?
Yes, I'd like to have a 5-minute warning and another 5-minute warning after that, and then let me go until my time's up.
Okay, so at 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then up to there. Is that's what you want there? I get a volunteer?
5 minutes and then at 10 minutes and then my time's up.
Okay. And does anybody wish to be the timekeeper for the day's meeting? I'm sorry, I should have arranged that earlier. Okay, well, we go forward. I will do my best here to do that on this side. It's all yours. The floor is yours now, Gene. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alex. My name is Gene, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm pretty sure I qualify to be in the fellowship, and I'm really glad to be here. I couldn't imagine saying that when I first discovered I had a problem with food. I grew up in a family with a lot of trauma. I came to understand that the world was not a safe place. It was a hostile place early in life. When I was 5 months old, my mother died. Her death was ruled a homicide. My father was sentenced to death in the electric chair and came within a few hours of his execution before the conviction was overturned. The community was polarized. My family felt isolated. They sat around the house waiting for my father to die, and they'd look at each other and say, "We don't have money and Bill's gonna die, but at least we have all we want to eat." So from a very early age, food was love. My grandparents gave me that as the only kind of thing that I had to offer. And I, in return, learned to eat and smile and accept that as the way I showed them love, as well as the way I received it. In my life, I've gained and lost 100 pounds at least 12 times. I've gained and lost 200 pounds two or three times, and I've lost 300 pounds once. And I've done so many of the behaviors that my friends here are familiar with. It was insane, but I came to OA a long time ago. I've been here 36 years plus a while. And when I came here, it was another diet. It was a way to control my weight, my eating, my relationships, and all the things that were out of control in my life. But initially, I thought if I could just be slimmer, life would be better. Except when I'd lose weight and was at goal weight or below, life wasn't okay. So I'd go back out again and do it again and again. For so many years, that was my pattern of life. Relationships were insane because I couldn't control what was happening, and I thought I should be able to control food, when and how I ate, what I ate, who I ate with, who I was dating, who I was living with, my family of origin, everything but controlling Gene. And it was always someone else's fault. I blamed people. I hated people because I thought they were responsible for my pain. And that simply turns out not to have been true. It was my distorted thinking that brought me to that place of desperation. I've done so many other crazy behaviors, I can only marvel at the fact that I'm still alive. And I'm an adrenaline junkie. I went to the military and thrived until I didn't. Then I came back to my hometown and became enmeshed with my family again. And pretty much every facet of my life was out of control, and I was trying to control it. So sometime around early 1984, I went to OA. And I went to a few meetings, and they were handing out food plans then. And so I thought, oh, this is another diet. And I kind of blew off everything else that was there. And in the process of blowing that off, I gained back a lot of weight after I'd lost it, after initially being handed the diet plan. You know, I can do it. I can control this. I can control food. I can control other people. And if I can't control them, I'll go someplace else and surround myself with new people. And again, that didn't work well, but I kept doing it over and over again for oh so many years. Having been a compulsive eater, obsessive compulsive about so many things from an early age, I need.
1 minute.
Thank you. And so what happened, I went to treatment in another 2 years, and I found the program, and there I was taught to work the steps, work the program, reach out to people, and get outside of my own head. And during that time, I started listening to people. I also came to have a planned eating plan and a plan of action that really worked. It included going to a lot of meetings, talking to people, learning how to be honest, more so than I'd ever been in my life. And during this, after 6 weeks of treatment, I went home and I discovered I was in many ways a different person, at least in parts of me. I still had issues to work on. And I continued to go to meetings. I made 90 meetings in 90 days. Being the compulsive obsessive person I am, I actually made 270 meetings in 90 days when they were all drive from one meeting to another. And it was good that I changed my focus of my compulsive obsessiveness to something that could be healthier and not have all the negative consequences I'd had in my eating behavior and my other addictions. And then I had a good strong abstinence for 7 years, and I was at goal weight for six of those years. I'd lost over 100 pounds, and I was happy. And then I invited a relationship into my recovery. And in inviting that relationship into that recovery, while I was still food abstinence and program abstinence, a part of me was not abstinent anymore, because I thought I should be in control of that relationship, or at least my own feelings toward it, and it should turn out like I wished it to be. So I went back out. I remember eating a frozen yogurt, quarter soaked frozen yogurt, and going back for two more quarts of it. And then I was off and running to my research on what relapse was like. I'm grateful that I can say honestly that I'm a relapse survivor, and I wouldn't recommend it to anyone who's listening to me. But one of the things I learned during that 7 years of abstinence and recovery was that I could never go out and believe it was okay again, and I still believed in recovery. For many, many years, I was up and down, and sometimes I would go to meetings and sometimes I wouldn't, but I believed that there was a solution, and that was more than I had when I went to OA the first time. I didn't believe there was a solution. I believed I was destined to die in my disease of the self-inflicted behaviors I was doing to myself and to others, the guilt and the shame and the anger, and just the absolute terror of waking up for another day and believing it would be just the same. That is the definition of insanity, and I do not wish to live it again. And I do not believe I have to do it again. Many things changed for me during that time of being in the wilderness again. I still listened to audios. I still read books. I still believe that there is something greater than myself. And that was the leftover from the long recovery I'd had. It stayed with me even in the desperation and the pain and the hopelessness. In Overeaters Anonymous, in the days when I first came to it, they said a person's in foreclosure. And that's like being in a house that's being foreclosed on. It's going to end soon. They're not actively suicidal, but they've given up. And I hadn't quite reached foreclosure, but I could see it from where I was at. And so I intensified several things. I read more. I created audios for others. I became helpful. And in a way, that was the beginning of my recovery that I'm currently experiencing. Although I wouldn't have said I was in recovery at the time, my sponsor tells me I was, because I was working toward a goal and making progress. And he told me, Gene, you're addicted to crisis and chaos. If you want to have If you want to have a crisis, go ahead and say you're not abstinent, you're not working the program, and have your crisis. And I decided I'd take his advice and not have a crisis. Part of what got me back to working program more intensively was helping others, as I stated. In my early OA days, I went to a meeting and my sponsor would say, make the coffee. And I said, I don't like coffee. I don't want to make it. And he'd say, I think you need to do it anyway. And there were just so many moments like that. But I found people that needed help and I helped them. And I started getting outside of myself. And I went to an AA meeting, taking a person there who needed an AA meeting. And while I was there, I just felt at home again. And in some AA meetings, I didn't feel as welcome as others, because while I could say I'm qualified to be in the room, it's true that my drug of choice is food. But at that meeting, among in a foreign country where half the people spoke English and the other half didn't, one man in particular and another man also said, I understand, I do that too, Gene. Keep coming back. So I did. And I found my abstinent date is in January of 2007. But my sponsor insists it's earlier. So who am I to contradict my sponsor? But I don't need to quantify it. Having had weighed 550 pounds, I'm now at a goal weight for several years. And I'm glad to be in the program. I'm glad to be working the steps. And one of the things I did in this recovery was I worked the steps, and then I worked the steps, and then I worked them again and again and again. And I reach out to people and I tell people what's going on with me. Part of my recovery has been going to counseling again. And it's been helpful in conjunction with this program. There are so many things that a plan of action can encompass. Go to meetings. If you feel like you're going to behave compulsively, call somebody in the program. Call an understanding friend. Make an appointment with a counselor. Talk to a dietitian if you need help with a food plan, especially if you have special circumstances like being diabetic. Was that me being done? Okay, then. I have had diabetes and I had arrhythmia, and those have been cured. I no longer take medication or have problems with those, having lost over 300 pounds and maintained that weight for a number of years. It is such a blessing, and I am filled with gratitude and love for myself and for this program and the people who have crossed my path in it. And I would just say that don't give up and keep coming back and get a sponsor, make some phone calls, be willing to take phone calls. And there are so many things that we can do. The first step says I am powerless, but it doesn't say I'm helpless. There are actions I can take. There are habits I can change. And with the help of the program, the help of the higher power, and my short definition of my higher power is that God is love and so am I. I grew up in a church, so I choose to call my higher power God, but it wouldn't have been recognized by me at that time in a church that I went to. And I'm not alone. And I can look in the mirror and say, Gene, you're a pretty good guy. And my healed relationships are too numerous to mention, but my relationships with my family of origin have found a place of comfort and love. My relationship with my children have been healed, and I do not know how to express the unquantifiable gratitude I feel for having love in my life again. Almost every day I live the majority of my day in a state of peacefulness, and when an issue comes up, I know how to deal with it instead of diving back into one of my compulsive obsessive behaviors and killing myself one forkful or one spoonful at a time. That has been relieved from me. I cook for my young children who are 15 and 10, and their food is their food, and if it's not their food and I shouldn't have it, it belongs to my higher power, and I release it to the universe. There is no way I can think of that would be a better way to recover from your addictions, your compulsions, and your disorders, and your diseases revolving around food than to come to open your mouth. And that was great timing for both of us. I passed.
Thank you so much, Dean. That was lovely. And thank you to our wonderful timekeeper. I'm going to put you to work as well for the next section. So thank you for your share. We're going to now start a Q&A section of this meeting. So if you have a question for Gene about his recovery, about his experience, his strength, his hope, please, you can either raise your hand in the participant list, or if you wish, you can post your question in the chat and one of the hosts will read this aloud for you. Just a reminder that this portion of the meeting is still being recorded. So if you do speak on the camera, you are agreeing to be recorded. So first one up is Jenna. Do you have your question? And oh, sorry, the response time will time you, Gene. It'll be, say, two. She's got lots of time. So let's start with three. If we have to shorten it down to two, we will. So 3 minutes for response. Okay, Jenna, your question?
Yes, I'm Jenna. I'm a compulsive overeater and a restrictor. Thank you so much for the meeting. And Gene, thank you so much for your share. Really blew me away. I'd like to know what daily spiritual practices you do, please, if I may. Thank you.
Would you repeat that for me? I had some background noise.
Sure. What daily spiritual practices do you do to get in touch with your higher power? Thank you.
I'm aware that I'm not everything is a start for me. That was a start in my program. But I have a higher power that God is love, as I understand him, and so am I. If I'm created in his, in a higher power's image, then, but I also pray out loud. It helps. It helps me to say, I don't know how to handle this. If there's something out there that can direct me, please direct me. And sometimes my higher power is the group. Sometimes it's people in program. It's getting outside of my own head and being willing to listen to others and to listen to the universe. And I don't think it matters very much what I call my higher power. I just know there is one. Maybe it's the group. Maybe it's my sponsor. Maybe it's my own inner wisdom. But I don't have to let that mental masturbation go along in my head. You have to. You can't. What do we do? What do we do? And to find a place and to know it will be okay. One of the things I've come to accept is that If it doesn't go the way I want it to, it's still okay, and it doesn't have to be a crisis.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Saoirse. Hello, Saoirse. Question, you go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Alex. Hi, Jean. Thanks for your share. I came in late there. I really needed a meeting. And your answer, what you were sharing, was so in-depth. And thank you for the times that you've been there for me. My kind of question is, I'm in active addiction today. I'm in the food I'm picking up. And I'm working step one. And I learned about myself that when I pick up, I don't pick up the phone. So today, I picked up the phone and I shared with a fellow that I'm in active addiction of food behavior. And I'm just wondering how you might respond to that, because I'm sure everyone here is going to have that experience. And I don't want to make myself wrong because I'm in the food, but that's what's happening for me. And it took courage to pick up the phone in that space, in that self-will and in that behavior. And I wonder if you can share anything from your wisdom on that.
I can share from my experience. I think I mentioned during my share that I thought I was still in relapse when my sponsor said, "Gene, I don't think you are." And so I would just say that if I'm making progress, and if I'm coming to meetings and I still have a desire to be abstinent from my compulsions and obsessiveness, then I'm still making progress and I'm still working my program. And there are peaks and valleys in recovery. It's not a straight line journey to, oh, I am wonderful and I have no problems, I have no issues. But if you're willing to keep coming back, if I'm willing to keep coming back and not give up, then I have a real chance at long-lasting recovery. And I would just say that there are peaks and valleys, and you're still trudging along to the road of happy destiny with your compulsive and obsessive behaviors. And you came to this meeting, you've made phone calls, and I think you're taking action steps to help yourself.
Thank you. That really helps. That's really positive and encouraging, the peaks and the valleys. Thanks, Jean.
Thank you so much. Jody has put her hand up privately in the queue here to go next. Do you want to question, Jody?
Yes, thank you. Hi, Jean. Thank you for your share. I am approaching the beginning of working the fourth step, and I'm a little intimidated by the process, and so I've been discussing that with my sponsor. And so she suggested that as I was in meetings for this next week, especially speaker meetings, to query the speaker as to how you approached your fourth step and if you had any advice about completing that.
Yeah, I have a belief that there's no wrong way to do a fourth step. And if you do an imperfect fourth step, like I do so many things, I sometimes get a chance to do them over. I've worked the steps more times than I can count. And almost every time something new comes up. So it's not like I can do it once perfectly. My original sponsor, while I was still in a treatment program, said, "Just do it, Gene." And if I left out half the stuff I'll put in next time, then that's okay. And in my attempt to be rigorously honest with myself and with others, there will be some healing. As I mentioned before in one of my shares, it's not a one and done type of program, it's a peaks and valleys. And so your fourth step may be different this time than it will be for another one. And both of them may be different than the next one. It's a progress, not perfection, kind of thing with the fourth step. And many people share what they can and then later find more that they would like to share. And there's no rule that says you can't do more than one fourth step, or that you can't do one fourth step and 6 weeks later do another one if something pops up. As we start to uncover the things in our past that were so painful, where we did wrong, where we feel like others wronged us and we blamed them, attacked them in our own minds, those things will start to emerge as we start having more healing in our life and more recovery. So just keep doing the work to the best of your ability. Do not expect to be perfect. Perfection is the enemy of good enough. Pass.
Thank you so much. Next person in line is Chris. What's your question for Jean?
Hi, Jean. Thank you so much for your share and your candidness around your own recovery. I'm sure there isn't a simple answer here, but I'm wondering if maybe you can give me a sense of how you manage childhood trauma and family issues through the program to find some peace around them.
Sure. In my early recovery, and even in my life before that, I blamed my family for the trauma that was put in place. And my father came home when I was almost 4 years old from death row and was released. It was convenient for me to blame the situation that he and my family were in for my pain. But eventually I came to understand on a deep, deep level that these people I'd held resentments against and anger against and blame for my terrible, terrible life, they were people like me and not perfect. And I can look back today and say with honesty, those people did the best they could with the tools they had, and that they loved me, and they went far beyond what many parents could have done in their situation to care for me and keep me safe. And so in working on resentments are such a killer. Literally, it fed me spoonful after spoonful when I was already very sick. So part of it is becoming willing to forgive myself. And when I can forgive myself, I must start forgiving other people. Or that the story of when they're one finger pointing, there are four pointing back at me. That was true for me. If I was blaming somebody else, I was blaming myself more. So blaming doesn't work for me. It's more, if emotion comes up, that's fine, but I don't have to encourage it. But in my addiction, I cherished that emotion. I fed it, I tended it, and it grew. In recovery, I can release it. The first step says we're powerless. It doesn't say we're helpless. There are some actions we can take.
2 minutes.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Jean.
Thank you so much. Next, we have Jennifer. Would you like to ask a question?
Hi. excuse me. So I am about 60-ish days into the program, currently finishing up step two. One of the things that I'm having a really, really hard time with is I'm atheist in the way that it's part of my identity. Like if people are Christian, it's part of, you know, it's not just a belief, it's part of who I am. It's something I'm working a lot with my sponsor as far as finding a higher power. I know that you said that your higher power is God, and that you were raised, I guess, in the church or with religion. I'm just trying to pick people's brains. Do you have any advice in kind of figuring out what a higher power could be, or what that could look like, that it's not necessarily God with a capital G? I feel like the more people I ask, the better I'm going to be able to figure it out for myself. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I have had some experiences in my early recovery after my treatment center experience. I had a sponsor that said had lots of sponsees at times, and in this, he had a person who vehemently believed there is no God, and he told her, okay, do you have a laundry basket? Yeah, was the answer. And he said, put it on your bed, and every morning get up and say, dear laundry basket, please help me. That's not a God, that's a thing. And it worked for that person, and the last I knew, she'd been abstinent for 20 years. And she credits part of that to him saying, just appeal to something bigger than yourself. Also, in early recovery, I must confess that meetings and the people in the room were my higher power. I could bring it to a group and talk about it. It doesn't have to be a God. And I've been unchurched for more than half of my life. It's just the tradition I was raised in. And I'm not sure that the church I was raised in would embrace my view of life. It may be a little simplistic for the rituals that are involved in the church I was born to. And so it can be a meeting. It can be, some people make a counselor their de facto higher power if you find somebody that's useful. Some people have a dear friend who's aware of food issues. But just keep coming back and you'll discover a higher power that works for you if you're willing. Beth.
Thank you so much. Blake, you're up next.
Hi, Jean. Thank you for sharing your story. My question is, when you first got into the program, did you find it hard opening up and reaching out to others? And what advice would you give to someone who does have trouble opening up to others?
Yeah, I had trouble relating to the other people in the meeting because they were all talking about things other than food that I didn't find useful. And in truth, I was probably had earplugs in my ears. So what I would say is, keep coming back and talk to people in the program. And if you don't find anyone at the meeting you're in that you feel like you can trust, call someone anyway. And if you don't like the way the phone call went, call someone else. Invite people to call you. Sometimes it's easier to open up one-on-one than it is in a group setting. Sometimes the group's actually safer for some people at certain times in their life and their recovery. And so it's about reading the literature, keep coming back, come to understand the jargon of the program so you'll have an idea of what people are talking about. If people start saying, oh, it's a simple program, it's not easy, or keep coming back, it works if you work it. Both of which I believe are true and were true for me. I just was a slow learner and I had to keep coming back longer.
Thank you so much. Well, that actually brings me to a question I always like to ask myself with speakers. What is your favorite slogans, or plural, what's your favorite slogan?
Oh, for me?
Yep.
My favorite slogan. In early recovery, it was halt, hangry, hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. Don't be that. And there's some quotes in the big book where it says that it's not other people's fault for the way I feel. I don't have the exact quote in my head. And that it's about myself and changing myself instead of changing other people and judging them. I wish I had the exact quote to hand, but I do not.
Thank you so much. Okay, any other questions? Jean, thank you so much for your share. We are so appreciative. And of course, this will be available in OA Footsteps. Big round of applause. Thank you so much. I'm going to stop the recording now.